Hello, my name is Dr. Neil Schultz, and I'm here with Richard Basser, who is the father of Mark Basser. Mark has been held in the Villawood Detention Centre for nearly 4 years now, and was recently removed from the Villawood Detention Centre, taken to Perth, and then on to Christmas Island. So I just want to ask his father, Richard, some questions about what's been happening to Mark, and so that we can all understand what's happening. So, Richard, a second federal court decision on the 5th of March in 21 said that the federal minister had not properly decided that your son's application for a protection visa, and that the minister should properly consider his application according to law. What's happened to Mark since that decision was made?
Well, he was waiting for some decision at the Villawood Detention Centre. But then he was moved from Villawood Detention Centre, and then he went to, they sent him to Perth, and then now from Perth to the Christmas Island.
So was he given any reason for when they pick him up?
There was no reason. They just came in the morning as they usually do, and tell him to pack up and move. He left a lot of his personal items back. Mm-hmm. Not only himself, but quite a lot of these guys who were in that group. You know, it was done in a rush in the early hours of the morning that day.
So in the middle of the night?
Yeah, it was early at about 4 o'clock.
Okay, so and he had no awareness that this was happening to him before that time?
And they just came and said, back up and you're moving. So that was it. So
I
they
see. Did
whatever they could then.
And were you informed of what was going on?
No. They never informed anyone of us. I mean, both Mark and everybody else. It was, everything was done without information to the families. And so we were caught by surprise. All we knew was that when they were just, you know, rushing them off, he just sent a quick text message saying that I'm being moved. That was it. And then we didn't hear anything until
right. So the first you knew it was when he was able to send you a text message.
That's when he was at Perth. So,
right. And what happened when he was in Perth?
While he was in Perth, you know, he was a bit uneasy because he was still, because we were waiting for the decision by the from the minister. And he was pretty uneasy, but they were suggesting, the border force and the circle securities were saying was that they were going to be there for some time for in a quarantine,
mm-hmm.
and then they'll be moving them to Christmas Island. And that's something that himself and a few other guys who were waiting for decisions and court, you know, appearances, court cases still pending, they were just rushed across there without informing the parents or families. And while he was there, he tried to get his lawyers to, you know, put some paperwork in.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen because, again, they rushed in the morning, fully armed, and took them away.
So I understand that there was an incident when he was staying at Perth. What happened there?
Okay. What happened was when the circle officers, the securities and the border force asked or came in and told those persons that were moved from Villawood to Perth that they will be moved on to Christmas Island. And they locked him up or locked the doors in a particular area and they couldn't let them out and just to prepare them to take them to Christmas Island. But mm-hmm. what happened was that, you know, without getting any answers from the management as to why they were going to be moved or, you know, they asked why they were going to be moved. They didn't get any answers. Yeah, a couple of the boys broke the back door, not Mark, but a couple of the boys broke the back door down and they climbed up onto the roof of that center.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't want to get off the center. And they were there for some hours, from the morning up until 9 o'clock that night. Some of them were, you know, they needed medication like mine.
Mm.
You know, they were on medication, but they had no water, no food. They were sitting on the roof for that, nearly the whole day up until 9 o'clock.
Okay.
And
Mark was on the roof at that time?
Yes, he was on the roof with the rest of them. Mm. And they were really, you know, wasting away more or less.
Mm.
They needed food and water, especially water, but they couldn't.
Mm.
They were not allowed anything.
Right. And so he was ultimately transferred out of Perth.
Yes.
When did that happen?
Okay. That one, on the 30th of September, at about 4 a.m. in the morning, a big group of past officers in protective riot gear.
I'm sorry, did you say they were masked?
Yeah, they had masks on. They couldn't, you know, so that they couldn't be identified. They had masks.
By mask, are you thinking like COVID mask?
No, I don't think so. I think they were, you know, armored, like
fully armed. See.
Yeah, riot gear masks.
Riot gears, right, okay.
Yeah, and they rush in to the rooms where these detainees were sleeping, and they started to use the shield and started hitting the detainees and literally tackling them down and, you know, forcing them to try to get them to prepare them, more or less physically prepare them, shackle them, and prepare them to get to the coach that was waiting for them. So I think what happened was it was really terrible. You know, a couple of people were punched. One of them had his ankle twisted.
Hmm.
And one of them had his eye socket, you know, cracked by the shields. And one guy, 50-year-old man, who's a sick person, he was tackled down and, you know, bruised. You know, it was really horrendous. And then they shackled them in chains. And they couldn't, you know, on the hands behind their backs, shackled to the waist, and their legs were shackled. And, you know, chained like in the movies that we see, slaves, yeah, what do you call them, chained to shackles and walking in a row. If one fell, everybody would have fallen down. And they were held in a holding cell for nearly 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 3 hours, they arranged a coach, a couple of coaches, to transfer them to Perth from that immigration detention center, which is about an hour's drive from the detention center to Perth. And then still in chains, circle in chains. And then they had to wait in Perth for about an hour.
Just to be clear about this, at around about 4 a.m,
yeah,
when Mark and all the others were asleep,
yep,
in their beds,
yep,
their dormitory, for want of a better word, was, yep, entered by effectively riot police.
Yes.
Masked.
Yes.
And they were...
with shields.
And then they were put in chains or,
yes,
restraints of some kind.
Yes.
Held for a number of hours in another cell.
Yes, for 3 hours.
And then put on a bus to be taken to the airport from the facility.
Yes.
Right.
And then from 5 a.m. to 2 a.m., they await a charter Airbus 8319. Which is an unmarked aeroplane. It's not one of the normal airline companies. Mm-hmm. Still chained in shackles or restrained, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark noted a uniform hostess with, I think for the airline company, I think he said Air Traders or something. So it must be a privately or unknown aeroplane that was chartered by the Border Force, and you're talking about, you know, nearly over $100,000 just to charter the plane. And you're talking about 15 people, including Mark, and you multiply 15 by 2 extra security guards for each person. So
you're saying it was a very expensive operation?
It was a very expensive operation. Even the operation from Willowwood to Perth was also the same by that same chartered airline company. And we're talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for that one trip. And again, this is another, you know, well over $100,000 for another trip. Now, this is my taxpayer money. This is Australian taxpayer money that, you know, the Border Force is, you know, wasting on this inhuman, human trafficking, I should say. Anyway, so they waited until at 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yes.
When the flight takes off from Perth. And they go to Christmas Island. And we had no communication between that time until Mark landed on Christmas Island. So, you know.
And so just to clarify this, were you aware that he'd been picked up from the facility in Perth already? Or you knew about it when he got to Christmas Island?
That's the first time that I heard was when he was in Christmas Island after all that has happened, because they've taken off their phones. Any means of communication was, you know, taken from them. So they couldn't even, you know, take photoshots or whatever. So we didn't know what was happening. Everybody was hijacked from Perth to Christmas Island. The government, you know, chartering this particular private unknown airline company to make these moves. So the flight took about 4 hours from Perth to Christmas Island, meaning that they arrived around 6 in the afternoon without arousing any public, you know, attention, which is done. Everything was done secretly. All these movements were done in secret and not letting us, the family, know what there was happening. I'm sure as a citizen, we need to be informed of what is happening to our family members. And these are done you're talking about our Australian citizens, family members, by our government.
So you're telling me that you and your family are Australian citizens?
Yes. And quite a few of those guys, the owner of the plane was over also.
Mark is not an Australian citizen, but he's been here since he was how old?
Since he was 11 years old.
Yeah. And he's now 30?
And now he's 30.
Yeah.
30, over 30.
Hmm.
And that's why we've been trying to get his, you know, visa, like the rest of us, under protection. We got our citizenship, our, you know, protection visa. Okay. The government saw that we needed protection, so they gave us protection visa. Why not mine?
So I just want to go back a bit. So, Richard, I understand that when Mark was in prison, he suffered an injury and that there were some serious consequences from that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Okay. With the injury at the juvenile center, he was not, you know, when he asked for, you know, assistance from the medical people in the center, they didn't attend to him. And it took him until nearly 2 days later when he was actually pissing blood.
Mm-hmm.
And the injury happened on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in severe pain. He couldn't sleep, he couldn't stand up. By Monday, when the nurse comes around, she goes to see the nurse and say, look, they just gave me Panadol and I am in severe pain, I'm pissing blood. And she realized that it was serious. So they rushed him to the Gosport Hospital.
Right.
And it was there that they started to do some scan and they realized that there was something severe inside,
So I understand that when he went to the hospital, that they discovered that he had a serious problem with his pancreas through the injury.
Yes. So they, rather than, having a probe put in, the doctor that saw him said, no, we have to, he ran through and asked for consent from me, or, because he was still a teenager, he asked for my consent for him to conduct an operation. So they took him down to Royal North Shore, and we were in hospital in Royal North Shore. He had a 4-hour operation to remove a third of his pancreas. And this is the doctor that worked on him. He's the specialist. He's the teaching doctor and a specialist in pancreatic cancer.
Okay, and he has to take medication now for...
So for the rest of his life, he has to take medication. Otherwise, he will die.
So do you have concerns about whether he can get treatment for that condition now?
That's the thing that I always ask when I speak to him, that whether he has taken his medication or not. Every day when he does call, I always make sure that he's keeping up with his medication. Without medication, he had an issue while he was in Blacktown, isn't there. He had an issue when he was not taking his medication for a week. He nearly died. They rushed him to the hospital, and he was just about gone, and they had to take him back in. It was just because he didn't take medication. He was just so weak, and I nearly lost him there.
And so what would happen at the moment? He's on Christmas Island. What's going to happen next?
That we don't know.
And is he getting that medication while he's on Christmas Island?
I hope he is, because he's supposed to be getting that particular specific prescribed medication. So he asked the medical people there to ensure that they have that supply for him. But what he did was, every time he's moved, he makes sure that he gets his, whatever supply that he has with him in a box, and he takes it with him. It stays with him all the time. So he's using that at the moment. But when that runs out, I don't know what's going to happen, whether the medical people will give him some more or not.
Okay. And we assume, of course, that this is all moving towards him being returned to New Guinea. Will he be able to get that kind of medication if he is returned to New Guinea?
I think that question was raised at the tribunal, AAD tribunal, and I think his doctor was on video link at the tribunal, and the doctor's advice to the tribunal was that, it is not possible for him to get that kind of medication at all, and therefore he needs to remain here under his supervision, because he needs to have regular checkups with his doctor, and that he cannot get at all.
Okay. So an important question then is, do you think that the minister or any member of the public should have any concerns about Mark staying in Australia?
They shouldn't have any concern, because he has just gone through prison system, and I think he has been a model prisoner, and he was able to be released on parole because of his good character. The parole board the serious offenders review committee. They normally conduct reviews every 6 months. So for the period that he was in prison, there's always been this SOG committee that reviews his status every 6 months, and he has been progressing positively, and I think, and my understanding is that the SOG is made up of former police, former judges or judiciary people, correctional service people, community leaders, and these kind of people. So they are the ones that can see that that any inmate or prisoner rehabilitation progresses. And so mm-hmm. they reclassify them from seriousness down to lower classification, up to the point when he was being able to classify to a stage where he was able to go out on day releases, on work releases.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I remember, when he was at the Cessna conference,
mm-hmm.
He was already working out on the field, using buggies to go and do work outside of the perimeters of the correction center. And then from there to Muscleville, he even went further than the boundaries of the correction center, working in the correction services farm, which was near the mine site in Muscleville, and also participate in the community work with a tree lopping company.
Mm-hmm.
And they travel to outside all the regions of, the Hunter region, you know, lopping trees. And that's a full day's work, not inside the community, inside the prison, perimeters.
Okay.
So he's working there every day from 5 to 6 at night,
mm-hmm.
outside of the prison, unsupervised. And he comes back and just goes and rest and goes out his day. And then he's called to go to the farm, and he's now on farm equipment, doing bales of grass and feeding the animals, rounding up cattle, horse whispering, plowing land, irrigation, whatever, unsupervised.
Okay, so.
So you're talking about a person who has completely improved from what he's, from being what he was characterized as to someone who is of completely low threat to the community. He was working in the community with the tree lopping company. All okay. of Upper Hunter,
So he's been to court a few times because of what's happening at the moment. What have the courts said about the idea of returning into PNG?
With the idea of sending to PNG, that's an idea that is coming from the government. But I think the court are saying that, look, he's asked for protection, and he's got the general reason to be given protection visa. And so each time here, it's for the third time, first through the AAP, and then twice at the federal court. The federal court has also made a decision. The minister will have to reconsider the decision, because he should be given a protection visa. Like, just like every one of us, the rest of the family.
Mm.
We were given protection visa because of the threat on our lives. He is not somebody outside of my family. He came as a child, and therefore, as part of the family, if the Australian government can see us, as the family, and grant us protection visa because of the threat on the family's life, how can they split my family, which includes Mark? Say, no, he can go back. We don't care. He can go back. And I think one of the documents that I saw, the former minister said he wouldn't care less what he does.
So it sounds like the court believes that it would be significant risk of harm if he exactly. were to go back to PNG.
That is exactly what the court sees.
Yeah. And I also was looking at some documents that suggested that the State Parole Authority in 2017 said that they assessed that he was a very low risk for causing harm to anybody in Australia.
That's it. That's
yeah.
And so why is the minister so stubborn, seeing things the way professionals are seeing? I mean, when I say professionals, I'm talking about the parole board. They don't just make decisions lightly and make recommendations lightly. And then there's the serious offenders community. They don't make decisions and assess people and say, we'll just give him or we don't give him. These are people who are in the profession. They know the characters of a person. When they come up and say, look, he's of lower risk, and who's the ministers to say otherwise?
So you're saying that these are serious people who know what they're doing and we should believe them?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
have you sought any help from any federal parliamentarians so far?
Yes, I've sought help from a few parliamentarians. I've written to a few parliamentarians, about five parliamentarians, mm-hmm. including my federal parliamentarian here in Newcastle. And she has been, responding. But the way she's saying, what she's saying is that, that she cannot really do much except for, to look at his welfare. And I think there was a reply that I got from the federal MP's office on the 1st of October. It states in part that the minister has made it aware to the shadow minister for Water Force, and as she has also followed up with our concerns to the minister in government and the department on Mark's welfare, and passed on the concerns to the department and the minister. But that's not addressing the, they're talking about the welfare, but they're not looking at the issue.
I understand. Well, look, we're going to have to stop in a minute, but just before we do, is there anything that you would like to say to anybody who is perhaps listening to this right now?
What I would say is that, maybe have some empathy. This is going on for two. I think, firstly it starts off with what I see is miscarriage of justice. Then we see the situation where, he is fighting to remain here with us, and we are fighting to keep him here with us as part of the family. Why is the government trying to split my family?
Okay. All right, Richard. Well, thank you for your time, and I wish you well.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.